Good morning. Thanks, everyone, for coming to our presentation on transforming the lecture. My name is Jeff Larson. I'm the founder and CEO of a Boulder-based company called In the Telling. We're the documentary instruction company. And it's a privilege for me to be on the podium today with Vanessa Perry from George Washington University and Nancy Rubin from Columbia University and a member of our board and investor in the company, Ray Henderson. I wanted to start by asking the viewers at home and any of you, how many people saw Sir Ken Robinson on Wednesday morning? Show of hands. Obviously, one of the great attractions for the event, fantastic speech. I just wanted to echo one of the things that he made a remark about that I really find true, and you'll see some representations of that, I think, in our presentation today. Technology really is transforming our culture in some very profound ways, particularly media communications. And Marshall McLuhan's ideas in 1964 about the extension of ourselves electronically is really coming true. So we'll show you some interesting examples of how the lecture is, we think, the next frontier for educational technology in that sort of transformation. So with that, it's my pleasure to introduce Ray Henderson, our board of director member and investor.
Thanks, Jeff. Hello to everyone who's watching from home today. And just for everyone in the audience, I'll just say I'm here in a different capacity than for those of you who know me. You've seen me do two things in my career, and I began actually with a bit of teaching and then content creation. I was a textbook publisher for about a decade before I began what is now a 20-year career in education technology and most recently as president of Blackboard's online learning division. And you know, I'm now moving into a transitionary role where I'm an advisor to the youth, growing my hair, sowing seeds, encouraging people who I think have good ideas and trying to enjoy myself. And I have to say this is just, I've had a great time getting to know this company and I'm here as a booster of some of the ideas that they have. And the slide previously, you know, there was a term that I've used with the company in kind of pulling an analogy from a previous generation of technology problem, and it was the last mile. And for those of you who remember this, you know, it's something that's been used in the telephony and bandwidth saga of the last couple of decades. It was about the, hey, we can easily get the network to the suburbs. But that last mile into the home is a very difficult challenge. And I've used that and morphed that as I've talked to the company about the last mile and the problem. It's kind of the analogy being the last mile is the lecture, or it's the direct instruction. And the today, you know, it's clearly not a physical, you know, or geographical analogy. The network now and the platforms for delivering these things now extend directly even into the hands of the learners today. But the problem is really focusing on that lecture, and it's something of, on the one hand, all of us here, and certainly myself, you know, I think we're all, you know, from, we've all had the experience of being in a lecture and being captivated, and that very, very special feeling that we have. But at the same time, as we think about the big picture and the macroeconomics of education, we know that it's an anachronism. It's not something that can be repeated. It's not convenient. It's a performance that's one time. It doesn't necessarily align to the biorhythms of the student and their attention span. And when we think about it in the same terms that we do for what do we do for the world's greatest storytellers when it's in the entertainment medium, how do we support them in telling that story? And you think about the artifice and the investment and the advantages that we bring to stories like that. You know, my question mark is, why can't we bring that to the other storytellers that are educators who have these, what are really great stories, but much less support? And so that's really what this company is about, is about helping people tell stories and about delivering and transporting those stories to people in the most convenient, the learners in the most convenient way. And you'll hear from others about something of their experience in that. So now one thing about the the methods that this company has introduced, and they're using a term here that I really like called documentary instruction. And once again, I'll appeal to your experience. You know, all of you have watched documentary film, and my guess is, as educators, that it's one of your favorite mediums, and certainly is for me. And once again, that experience of a story being revealed to you, and the methods of documentary filmmaking, the ability to simultaneously give you backstory and to give you a foreground narration and to give you motion graphics that help you. What it does is it brings real power of condensing a story, you know, on multiple levels into something that you can consume and reconsume. And I think personally that it's a documentary film is a very underrated medium for its instructional power. But this is a company that's taking those. They are filmmakers and they understand these methods, and they are leading a path of trying to help transfer some of those, not just the technology, but also the skills of documentary filmmaking to telling the story about the lecture and saying, look, you don't have to think in terms of 16 weeks times 3 times 40 and filling the time. Think instead of what is the story? Where does it begin? What's the narrative? What are the most compelling visual elements that we can bring motion graphics to and try to help improve and professionalize that story? So that's what it's about. Now, one thing I'll note that it's not, and it's not lecture capture, right? That can be done. And I'll just say I'll differentiate those two as, you know, this is not about just archiving what is a lecture. It's about thinking of the thing that will replace that lecture in the places where you want to have the highest investment. It's about creating a new type of product that is with a fundamental aim of, you know, just expressly about student engagement and reaching a much higher level of student engagement. And so, and again, the other key thing about this is this last comment of the faculty that are the stars and the producers of this, you know, there is an element here that's recognizing that the talent, the people that are up telling these stories, they've got the juice. What they need is support and investment, and the professionals that come from that can come from a company like In the Telling to help them, capture that story. And again, in the end, it's a performance. You know, and we all know about a performance that sometimes the first take isn't the best one. What would it be like if you had the ability to capture the very best and then to encode it in the medium and put it into a distribution network that augments the infrastructure you already have and further professionalizes it? And I think it's something that it's a very promising idea, and you'll hear from people who've been experimenting with this about, you know, the type of results that they think that they have produced. But I'll just note about it that, you know, and again, another, I'll make the there's an interesting question that's come up in this big MOOC debate that is so often discussed. One of the things about the MOOC debate that's happened, and I think there are many positive things that have come from this, but one of the things that caught a lot of attention and caused some controversy this year, I'll reference the San Jose State articles and whatnot, and this is the idea of capture the footage from one great instructor, bring it to the other institution and borrow it and play it back and change the role of the local faculty to supporting that story. And, you know, there may be places where that is in fact what's needed. But I'll say the thing that, I've been a student of reading about experiences that this type of thing has caused. And the thing that strikes me, and it just seems so right from what I've seen about education, is it doesn't work in one very important way. And that is what happens in that transference and that, again, in terms of student engagement, it's about engaging with the authority. And when you pipe in the authority and you make the people that are there something less than the authority, the facilitator or what have you, again, there's doubtless there's value in it, but I think it's different This is about taking the people who are telling that story locally and who've already figured out how to contextualize it for the audiences that they're talking to and making them ever more the authority with the added production and the added, the benefits and the professionalizing, you know, of the story that goes along with it. And I think that too can be something that will make that performance ever more compelling. So another thing about this that, you know, again, I'm not the filmmaker here, you know, or the deep thinker about this that Jeff is, but, you know, another of the things is I've talked to the company about the benefit that I see that they can bring is, you know, it's scene-based instruction. And that is, as you think about telling the story, one of the things about the lecture is you can only perform the narration one time. When you have the digital medium, we know the stories have multiple levels happening simultaneously. Now, of course, you can tell the story and you can cycle around and spiral around and weave in more of it at the same time, but that's one of the powers of the technology is you can tell the story simultaneously on multiple levels and then allow the student then, as they are receiving that story, to determine which parts of that scene they're looking at. And so this is a company that's very much experimenting with, you know, trying to enrich that storytelling and synchronize multiple forms of media around a vocal track, at one time. And it's very much, you know, we're in first generation of that. But again, I think it's a very promising area for trying to improve on, you know, a lecture format that is being challenged in this area of student engagement. Now, a lot's been said about analytics and the context of big data and, you know, trying to roll up information across the whole of institutions. But one of the insights that this company has had about, you know, trying to achieve something in this flipped classroom type of a concept where students engage with material ahead of time but then come in for interaction sessions is, as you think deeply about that, you know, one of the things that's different is, you know, when faculty walk into a room where everyone's just expecting a lecture, it's not as demanding of them to know about where the students are in their understanding. They can only deliver one story at a time. In the flipped classroom concept where they're, you know, the students are interacting with the material ahead of time, well, we know what happens. There's certain parts of that class that are going to be much more engaged and are going to voraciously consume that and reconsume it, and they're going to show up with concept awareness that's very different than those who, I didn't do the pre-work, right? And so you're going to wind up, you know, the interaction sessions are challenging, and they're going to radicalize, you know, some of the concept differences, you know, in that student population. And so one of the problems that the company is working to solve is, you know, along with the delivery of this video, documentary instruction, it's short capture of formative assessment so that you can produce something of a heat map of where did the students need to review certain parts of the material that was created, where do the students have quick concept gaps, where should you spend your time. And so they're building in analytics that are intended to be very pragmatic, and rather than being focused on the institution, being focused on that faculty that needs the insight just prior to walking into the classroom, which is one of the problems with big data, right? Analytics take time. And this is about doing it in the time it takes to improve instruction. So I think it's unique and again, very valuable in that way. Similarly, one of the things, you know, I had the good fortune early in my career, this is 20 years ago, as I was a textbook publisher, I worked with Eric Mazur, who some of you may know, Harvard physics professor, who's really the inventor of a methodology called peer instruction. You know, and credit to, I know there are others who've been very helpful in that, but one of the things about peer instruction, you know, it's a great form of interactivity. It's not the only form, but it's one that in the flipped classroom concept that people are drawn to. I want to bring my students together and let them teach each other. You know, but one of the insights from that is, you know, that grouping, you know, are you going to do this? Are you going to bring students in the morning of and say, oh, you two and you two and you two pair off and help each other? Or do we need to support the instructors with something that helps them choose an instructional model? Let me pair those who have rich concept understanding with those who don't. Let me take all of those who have really strong understanding and do something different with them than those who didn't do the work in the first place. You know, again, it is just the thinking through the connotations of flipped classroom and where can technology provide better insight for those instructors and a richer experience for the learners. You know, this is a company that I think is doing some very important work in that area. We talked about the last mile, and one of the things about this meeting is you hear so much at EDUCAUSE about the ubiquity of mobile devices. That we have another statistic I heard yesterday. Google, they reported their earnings, and one of the interesting little factoids that they brought forward was YouTube now has 40% of their viewers are viewing from a handheld device. Now, I think if we parse that viewership down to the demographic of most of the learners we're addressing, I know it's more than 40%, right? People have the handheld devices, they use them, and their powerful expectations of what is engaging are being set. And so this company is also about making sure that all those details between capturing the story and getting it to students in the format that is the most valid and the most like their consumer experience is done for them. So everything they do in terms of platform development is done with a mobile device as the first place and responsive design so that, you know, it's really independent of the screen size someone is looking at it. They're conceptualizing this to work on whatever screen the student happens to have. And then, of course, in terms of LMS compatibility, particularly given my background in that world, you know, my advice and encouragement to them is, hey, first principles here, we don't recreate the wheel. We acknowledge the technology that's out there. We need to benefit and supplement that where it's needed. Sometimes that's something that you can see, you know, in the platform and in the LMS doesn't help you create and capture, you know, video very effectively, and, you know, nor does it have instructional method about documentary. But sometimes it's things that you can't see, which are, you know, areas that are classically difficult for video-intensive courses, and that's, you know, the distribution and playback. And so one of the things you can't see about In the Telling is the very sophisticated global network for video distribution that they have created that powers this. So the idea is, work with open standards like LTI, plug it into the LMSs, and here you see Instructure Canvas and Pearson's Open Class, and of course we've got a Blackboard 9.1 instance, but their platform plugs directly in so that the launch point for the documentary instruction can continue to be the launch point that is the most familiar one. And then finally, just flipped classroom as a service. The recognition here is that this stuff is, this is not like lecture capture in that the thing you need is simply to buy the webcam and capture video and move it around. This, it takes more artifice, you know, it takes more of these professionals that are helping produce the story and capture the video and working on the platform. I mean, this is, it requires investment. And so the concept here is that, you know, by working with a great range of educators, that, you know, this is a company that can, you know, help reduce that initial form of investment that's required to get into something like this, and then to take care of the extra service elements and providing support for the learners in a way that's, you know, quite simpatico with the way that you're used to purchasing and consuming education services. And so that's why I am so interested in this young company and have agreed to advise them and invest in them. And thank you, and I'll let Jeff introduce our next speaker.
Thanks, Ray. Very nice job. Well, I'm a great believer in pictures, or more appropriately, film telling a thousand stories. One of the things I wanted to point out is, as we do these documentary instruction projects, a number of other opportunities for marketing support materials are thrown off because we're using high production value film techniques. This is a 60-second commercial that will introduce our next speaker, Professor Vanessa Perry from George Washington University, and this is a sample of our work.
The main takeaway here is that history shapes us, called democracy in America. De Tocqueville was a Frenchman who was very much taken with what was going on in the United States.
We have to fix our economy. We need to close our deficit.
So this concept of sampling distribution is really very important.
And here to tell us more about the digital community at George Washington University, I'm pleased to have Vanessa Perry, who's a newly minted assistant dean for specialized masters. She's also a professor of marketing and one of the stars of our show. Vanessa.
Okay. Yeah, that one. All right, great. What I've, first of all, it's great to be here. On the West Coast again. Great to see all of you this morning. What I've been asked to talk a little bit about is the experience of going from a sort of traditional classroom format, which is what I have, what many of us probably are most accustomed to or sort of grew up with experiencing and conducting, to working with In the Telling and building our digital community program at GW. So let me just say, one of the most interesting and unusual experiences that I had when I first went to put together a digital version of a course for our online MBA program, which was the Marketing Core course, the most interesting experience, and I hope that you all get a chance at some point in your life to see yourself as a cartoon. It just really is very, very cool. So anyway, just thought I'd throw that out there. So we have a program which started out with our global MBA program, but now we are extending the digital community to encompass many of our specialized master's programs. So I won't go through all of them. We have quite a few, but they include a Master's of Science of Information Systems and Technology, Master's of Science in Project Management. We'll soon add our Master's in Tourism program, Master's of Science in Finance, a host of programs that include both our MBA standard curriculum and then some of our more professional specialized areas. And we came to this because of any number of marketplace challenges and some of the issues that Ray talked about, and I'm sure most of you are in this room because we're all well aware that this isn't really an optional exercise, but it's really critical for us to embrace technology and try to use it in a way to advance education because students are demanding these kinds of opportunities. That's not the cartoon me, but it's me. Just a screenshot. So let me just tell you a little bit about what I think stands out most about our GW digital community and other programs like it. First, our program is 25% synchronous and 75% asynchronous. So what does that mean? It means that there is a sort of lecture component to most of our course offerings, but it's certainly nothing like a lecture capture kind of thing that Ray was talking about. I learned the hard way that that actually just does not work. Imagine sitting in front of a computer, some people are sitting in front of their computers now, and trying to watch someone talk for 60 minutes. It's almost impossible. And even if you did do it, at best, it's boring. I don't care how dynamic the person is. It's even hard to watch a movie that you love in that kind of delivery format. So, you know, but I didn't know. I was new to this, and so I thought, okay, I'm going to get in front of the camera, and I'm just going to talk the way that I get up in front of students and have been talking for years. And I can talk. Trust me, I can go on and on for 75 minutes, 90 minutes. I can talk. And one of the things that I always thought was just because I was talking that people were listening and that they were picking up on those things that I thought I was able to emphasize. So it was very much a challenge for me to learn when I sat down with our instructional designers and with the folks from Intelling that, guess what? Yeah, people really aren't paying that much attention to what you're saying. And so this is why when you go back and you give midterms and you give finals and you give assignments, you're surprised to find out that students missed whole chunks of material. It's because your assumption was that they were getting it and they actually weren't. So what I had to do in the process of transitioning from my traditional lecture format to something that, if I say so myself, is really exciting and fun, was to sit down and for every topic in the course, I had to identify 5 or 6 key concepts that were not just critical for the students to learn, but that I could, in my own unique way, explain to them in a way that I thought would resonate better than perhaps any other format. 5 or 6, that's it. And that was really very difficult because I had to really come to grips with the fact that, hey, I'm not an expert on everything. I'm not good at explaining everything. But now I can pick 5 or 6 things that I am really good at explaining. And for those things that are not within my direct expertise, I can pull in some other materials, right? I can pull in excerpts and clips from some of the world's star academicians and practitioners. And I can assign other supplementary exercises and readings that really can now build on strengths that are beyond the reach of what I would be able to do if I were just in the classroom where I've been for many years. So part of the transition, the biggest part, the hardest part, was really coming to grips with my own personal limitations and at the same time my own personal strengths. I learned a lot about what it is that I really do know well. Not that many things, but I was at least able to come up with a couple. But then I was able to sort of find ways to balance that and so that the students would have a really great experience. So I wanted to mention another point about the synchronous versus asynchronous setup. The way that many of our courses are organized is that in 25% of the content, we're actually still interacting with students. We're doing live chat sessions. We're doing discussion boards. We're doing one-on-ones. I did group meetings with small groups of students live. And so for people who think that we're talking about not interacting with students, it is absolutely the opposite. In fact, once you get accustomed to interacting with students in that format, you actually get to know them better than you would in a sort of face-to-face traditional environment, because in the face-to-face you got, you know, this room full of people, and you may or may not remember who they are. But when you actually are chatting with them one-on-one, and you end up chatting with them one-on-one, you really do start to learn the nuances of people's personalities. You learn about their interests. You learn about their strengths in a sort of much more customized, personalized kind of way. So that's one thing. The other thing has to do with the asynchronous content. And that's what I was referring to before when I said these are the five or six things, the key elements that really are best delivered via sort of video lecture format. And we do those in 5 to 6 minute brief clips. Recording those, I have to say, is one of the most difficult things I've ever had to do in my life. but the nice thing about it is it gets to be edited. And they do really cool things like turn you into a cartoon, like I said. And when you see it, it's almost unbelievable that this kind of product could be created from what used to be my long, lengthy, 75-minute rambling lectures. Okay, so a little bit about the process, and then I'll stop talking. If I were to share with someone how to take their course and turn it into one of these digital documentary style courses, I would say start out by identifying the goals of the course. What is it that you want students to walk away knowing at the end of the course? And so let's just say there are 25 or 30 different concepts. And then you'd want to kind of divide those by session, you know, so a lot of us go by a week-to-week kind of format, or maybe twice a week. So let's just say for every week, every session, you want them to walk away with these 5 or 6 key things. Then the challenge is to figure out what is the best way to deliver those 5 or 6 key things. Is it going to be sort of mini lectures or lecture clips? Is it going to be YouTube videos of experts? Are you going to ask some practitioners in the field perhaps to do some recordings for you and actually join in and talk about something that's going on in the real world? Is it actual work sessions where students are being shown sort of how to do sort of mathematical equations and problems? Are they small group work sessions where, you know, there are sort of peer instruction kinds of methodologies going on? Which are the best to deliver those? So that's the goal work part, and I certainly don't want to suggest that it's an easy process. Because if you come from the kind of traditional format, yeah, you got some course objectives, and then you just get up there and you talk, and you hope that students do the readings, and you give them quizzes and tests, and, you know, every once in a while you give out some Fs and you move on. But not this is not going to work anymore. So go from the goal stage to the actual planning stage. And the reason why these are in bubbles that kind of go back and forth, because it really isn't a linear process. You know, there's a lot of sort of dynamic going back and forth, revising the goals, planning, going back again, identifying supplemental media, going back again. But then after a couple of rounds, you can move into a stage where you're actually executing this, you're actually doing the videotaping and actually pulling together the other materials and integrating and doing a lot of testing. You know, a lot of going back and seeing now, does this make sense? Does this fit together? And in a lot of cases, you really end up going back to stage one again. You know, do I have a complete set so that students, through this interactive media documentary experience, learn what they need to learn to be able to master this course? What you'll find is that your students will learn so much more than they did before. You kind of start to question what it is that, you know, you did in the course of your education. How could you possibly have learned anything by sitting there and listening to people go on and on and on in a classroom year in and year out? That really is the kind of takeaway that I've experienced, and many of my colleagues that are going through the same process of converting their traditional courses into this format. Lastly, I'll just mention that I did a little experiment last summer. So we ran this online digital community version of our introductory marketing course for MBAs for the first time last summer. And then at the tail end of that, I actually, at the tail end of the taping experience and the production experience, I taught the same course face-to-face. So I had these going on simultaneously, but what I decided to do was use the content that I had prepared for the digital community course in the face-to-face 60-student MBA lecture. Best course I ever taught. Students loved it because by definition it was sort of hybrid, so there were all of these sort of digital materials that were available to them, and they weren't expecting that. You know, they were expecting to come in and listen to somebody lecture for 2 hours once a week. And so not only does this model work extraordinarily well in the digital space, it works extraordinarily well when you bring it back into the classroom. So with that, I will say thank you very much for your attention, and I look forward, hopefully, to chatting with some of you afterwards.
Thank you, Vanessa. Very gracious introduction to the work we've been doing at George Washington University. It's a privilege now to bring up Dr. Nancy Rubin, who we've been working with at Columbia's Continuing Education Department and is a kindred spirit in the theoretical aspect of what we're doing.
Yeah, Jeff and I bonded over the theory. So in addition to being a practitioner, I really am a researcher also, and this really spoke to me. There is a history in transmedia. It's not really a new fad. Some of the theorists that you can trace it back to, Marshall McLuhan, who was fairly radical in the 60s and 70s, was poo-pooed. He was, you know, he was really envisioned the World Wide Web and how technology can be a revolutionizing agent. But when the World Wide Web was actually, you know, introduced publicly, people are now starting to go back and revisit a lot of the work that he did. And he was, if you've ever heard the saying, the medium is the message. And whenever I say that, I usually get a lot of pushback on Twitter. But it really is. I mean, it's not just about creating engaging, awesome content. A lot of it is how that content is delivered. And the medium really can matter. As one of McLuhan's quotes, it's not something that's neutral. It should engage you. It can does something to people. You know, it affects them. And Henry Jenkins is a current, you know, theorist who really does a lot of work with transmedia. And I think what's really key here is that, and you'll see on my next slide, it's multiple pieces that all contribute to one story delivered over, you know, different channels. You know, so it's not a story that is chunked up and then delivered in different pieces. It's a story that unfolds across the different channels, and all of the pieces contribute to the whole. I started at Columbia in December, and I met these guys pretty much right away and knew that I wanted to work with them. We're kind of an unusual environment at continuing ed because we develop courses in multiple disciplines. This is just a portion of some of the programs that we have. We have a full production team in-house, so we have instructional designers, course developers. We have a whole media team, graphics, live events, and we're developing for disciplines, statistics, actuarial science, technology management, information knowledge strategy. And while it's really interesting, you know, we're dealing with different disciplines, different learning styles, and different types of content. And really all of them lend themselves to this type of delivery format. We piloted In the Telling in two courses that we ran in this fall. And we're gathering a lot of feedback and results on what we did. We really value analytics, and analytics inform everything that we do. We've worked with them to, you know, sort of let them know the analytics that we need out of the product, and, you know, they've been really receptive in helping us, you know, build those types of things. And in addition to the analytics that we get out of the tools themselves, we do focus groups, we do student surveys, and media is very much a part of everything that we do. So video is part of all of our courses. We have a video production team. We've been producing video, but really just embedding them in the courses. And taking this approach is really a very different way of delivering that content and engaging students. And when you put it in the learning management system, it has a completely different look and feel than just the traditional content that you're delivering. And some of the feedback that we've gotten from students is that video really does matter, particularly in online classes. And again, we're not really talking about webcam video or just talking heads. We have really high production values as well, and that's probably why I think we related so well. But one of the things that video really does is establish a sense of presence, particularly for the faculty. And that's one of the things that's probably most key about having a successful online class. The students really like it. One of the things that I would say has been evident in all of the analytics, regardless of how many videos and how long they are, students really drop off after 4.5 to 5 minutes. And that's true across the board. It doesn't matter whether you have a 5-minute, a 10-minute, or a 90-minute video. The analytics have shown that they really only watch 5-minute chunks at any particular time. And so this is just a really great way of delivering impactful information in a really exciting, engaging way for students. And again, we use a lot of multimedia elements. We have an animator on staff, so we're doing a lot of this anyway. This is just a really great way to tell that story and put all of the pieces together. As an instructional designer, I kind of feel like we've taken chunking way too seriously. We've chunked our courses up to the point where there's no thread that goes all the way through them. And then this is a way of sort of bringing that narrative concept back to the course. And I think that's really, really important, whether you're dealing with a small traditional class or a MOOC. I mean, I really think that this could be something important, you know, in the MOOC environment as well. And, you know, our students really value the high production, the effort that we put in to video production really is appreciated by our students. So, as I said, we did a pilot. We're gathering feedback. It was very well received. This is the 1.0 or 2.0 player, and we're excited about the new iteration. And I think that some of the feedback that we got has already been addressed in the new version of the player. But overall, the response was very well received by the students and the faculty. They really enjoyed the process. And we're really looking forward to doing more exciting things within the talent.
Thank you, Nancy. Well, I see we're just about out of time, but I would like to give a little bit of a sample of the new telling story version of the product that has been informed by the work we've been doing at George Washington and Columbia and some other schools. So I'm going to kind of skip forward past. Actually, let me say a couple of things about the methodology we use. The scripts that we use with the instructors are really, as Vanessa said, compressed versions of the long form of the lecture. We work in collaboration with the faculty and instructional designers. Our filmmakers and technologists are there early in the process to help define what the program should look like. And again, it's this 5-minute drop-off, really addressing the YouTube generation in a familiar format. Our documentary approaches include interviews. We stage small groups and have dialogues between students. Sometimes the professors directly address the students at home through the camera. We use case-based field recordings as well, and that's an area that we're very excited about expanding the possibilities on that frontier. And we also do these instructor bio presentations, so we do a little mini documentaries to help kind of tee up the experience for the student who they're going to be matched with in class. And again, the broadcast production values that we bring to it, the right kind of filmmaking tools, we use multiple cameras, we use lots of animation and infographics, we use stock footage and material that we originally shoot. Of course, it's all built around the idea that a story well told needs to be organized in a cinematic way. So I'll give you a little bit of an example. I'm going to maybe jump past a little of this video.
Y'all were sort of trained, y'all went to college and it was all the same format. Well, you know, the experts say that one of the worst things you can do is lecture for an hour. That's like the worst way to deliver material to people. So it's time for us to let that go anyway.
I was living and working in Nepal. I'd been working for a small Nepali company.
So this concept of sampling distribution is really very important.
For the sake of time, I'm just going to jump ahead and show you a little bit of the...
What else might be important?
Telling story platform.
Particularly,
so as you can see, we have
Israel,
the film in the upper left-hand corner in this particular layout, but because the interface is entirely designable, based on the scene and what's most appropriate, we're using the entire canvas and making some of the other options available, the transmedia elements that are synchronized with the material. John, you could turn the audio back up.
Pictures, animations, websites, documents, even other videos can be synchronized to the episode timeline. Content can appear in full and then fade away based on its cue point. We call this ambient media because it's displayed in full as the episode plays.
That is blessed to have many access points to the outside world. If you have lots of ability to have ports and railways and so on, and if those railways take you into neighbors with whom you have friendly relations, that can be a very positive thing.
Typically, ambient media is brought in to visually reinforce what the speaker is saying. For example, a map can be shown when the speaker is talking about a location, or in an art history course, if a painting is being referenced, a picture of the painting would appear. Content can also be synchronized and queued as a resource for deeper exploration. We call this type of content telescope media because it allows students to investigate a subject more deeply than what is being presented in the main video. In this example, a PDF file was queued because it relates to the topic Dr. Riddle is discussing. The student can preview the article inline, and if they decide to explore further, they can click the arrow to open the article in a new tab. Here's another example where a website was included as synchronized media. Again, the student can review the website inline or open the article in a new tab. The ability to synchronize content to the episode timeline is a powerful storytelling tool for instructors. Current events can be integrated with their stories to keep them fresh and relevant, and they can easily provide alternative storylines for students to explore based on their interests.
So that's a new telling story platform, much of it informed by the work we've been doing with George Washington and Columbia University. I'd like to thank our panelists today, Vanessa Perry, Nancy Rubin, and of course Ray Henderson on our board. And I'd like to thank the viewers at home for hanging in there and all of you for coming in on a Friday at the end of a long conference. Thanks very much, everybody.